It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your voicemails, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-272-9461.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Good evening to the listening audiences in Mobile, Montgomery, Huntsville, and beyond. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode. We're really excited about tonight's program, so let's get to it. Tonight, we have four fantastic members of this evening's conversation team. The first is Miss Aquiline Kennedy.
Good evening, everyone.
President of Kennedy Strategic Communications. The second, joining us in studio, is Ms. Pamela Lafitte, who is the Democratic Party nominee for Alabama Secretary of State. The third, joining us by phone in the bottom half of the hour, is Ms. Yolanda Flowers, who is the Democratic Party nominee for Governor of the State of Alabama. And last, but no wise least, is Mr. Charlie Moss, who is working the production board and keeping Kennedy for Alabama sounding good on the airwaves. Now for the headlines. The first headline comes from Politico.com. It reads, Kansas voters block effort to strip abortion protections from state constitution. It was written by Alice Miranda Olstein and published on the 3rd of August, 2022. The second headline comes from VanityFair.com. It reads, election deniers had a big night, as Democrats who think they'll be easier to beat. It was written by Eric Lutz, and it was published on August 3rd, 2022. The final headline comes from a press release on the Secretary of State's website. It reads, photo voter ID posters are available at Board of Registrar's office. The statement was issued by the Honorable John Merrill, Secretary of State of Alabama, and published on August the 1st, 2022. With that, I will look to my left and welcome Ms. Pam Lafitte, who is the Democratic Party nominee for Alabama Secretary of State.
Good evening.
How are you doing this evening?
I am doing excellent. Excellent.
I am so glad to finally have you in studio.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Hey.
Once again.
It is absolutely my pleasure. And here's kind of what it is that I'd like to do. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of your candidacy for Secretary of State, can you just take a moment to explain to the listening audience who may not necessarily be familiar with you a little bit about your background before you ran for office?
Okay. I am Pamela J. Lafitte. Hello to everyone. I am presently a correction sergeant with the Mobile County Sheriff's Office here locally in Mobile, Alabama. I am a veteran of the United States Air Force Reserves, where I served 14 years and 8 months.
Okay.
And then also in the United States Air Force Reserves, when I was in basic training at Lackland Air Force Base, I had the prestigious honor to be the dorm chief.
Oh, wow.
Where our flight, I was able to lead us into honor flight, is what we graduated as.
Mm-hmm.
And I was grateful of that leadership style that I had then. And then also I was Miss Bishop State here in Bishop State Community College, where I attended at Bishop State. And then I was SGA president there. This has been in the early 90s, 91, 92-ish. And then also after I accomplished so many other different organizations and activities, I went on to Faulkner University and graduated with my bachelor's in business. And then also I went on to be accepted at the University of Alabama into the MBA program.
Oh, wow.
But because of the work conflict, I had to pause it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will pick it back up.
Okay. All right. All right. So just a couple of things to reinforce. You are a military veteran.
Yes.
You serve in the United States Air Force?
Yes.
All right. And educated here locally?
Yes.
At Bishop State and Faulkner?
Graduated Baker.
Some of our friends, obviously the folks here in the Mobile area, are going to understand all of those names. I just want to make sure that other listeners throughout the course of the state understand that those are Mobile County proximate institutions.
Yes.
So, and currently you work and serve in the Sheriff's Department.
Yes.
So what exactly do you do for the Sheriff's Department?
Actually, as supervisor at the Mobile County Metro Jail, where I am a correction sergeant.
Okay.
And from there, I had the honor and prestige as being the president, past president and past vice president of the Mobile County Merit Systems Employees Associations here for Alabama, for Mobile, Alabama, excuse me.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thank you so much for telling us a little bit about your background. The one thing that we have been doing thematically on Kennedy for Alabama throughout the course of this election season is just making the distinctions between how we are as Alabama Democrats and where that may differ from some of the talking points that are coming out of D.C. from the National Democratic Party, and particularly the combination of being a veteran plus serving in the Sheriff's Department in the corrections function, I think is very significant given the fact that you're running for statewide office. But it shows that you are a person who is passionate about accountability, because that's what we learn in the military.
Yes.
And clearly being in corrections as a professional area, I'm sure you wouldn't be there if you didn't think that certain people in our society needed to be held accountable.
Correct. That is so true.
All right. Well, thank you for indulging me there. So now let's transition to the candidacy. So you are a nominee for Secretary of State. So if you're fortunate and blessed enough to be elected to that position, what are going to be your priorities?
My first priority is to make sure that I remain with the integrity, honesty, and have accountability and transparency.
Okay.
What I have noticed with the transparency part is that when a lot of the convicted felons, when they actually legislation had passed as to what charges was actually going to be pretty much of the moral turpitude.
Okay.
A lot of the prisoners who were released from custody did not know that their voters' rights were restored.
Sure.
And I believe that the Secretary of State's office should have been more transparent with that and getting the information out to those individuals who were released from state custody or federal custody.
Okay. So we have actually had the privilege of interviewing Secretary Merrill on Kennedy for Alabama. And one of the things that we talked about during the time that he was here on the positive side was the fact that they are very proactive with trying to get people to get their photo ID, make sure that they bring that when they're going to the polls and stuff like that. So you could actually see the public service announcements reinforcing and emphasizing that message. Mm-hmm. So are you suggesting that if you were sitting in the Secretary of State chair, that you would put some more public service announcement emphasis on individuals who were previously incarcerated and letting them know that their rights have been restored, or the process to go through to get their rights restored? Is that kind of the direction that you're headed in?
Yes. With the transparency in that area, there's a lot of more transparency that needs to be brought forth to all of the voters of Alabama.
Okay.
But yes, that will be something that I will key in and look into, because I know a lot of individuals' addresses may have changed, but still there are certain notices that can go out to alert one individual or two or more. It's more than one way to actually deliver the message that to the voters who have been incarcerated that their rights have been restored.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that. So what other priorities would you have if you're fortunate enough to be elected?
I'm looking at early voting Friday, Saturday, Monday prior to Election Day.
Okay.
for voters, because many American voters are actually working more than one or two jobs.
Sure.
They're working longer hours. They have child care, other activities. And then even though that Alabama has in place a law for the employer to give their employee at least an hour to go to the polls and mm-hmm. vote, but even if that employee asked generously if they will have time to actually go to the polls and vote prior to that day of election, many employers are telling, from what has been told to me by voters, is that yes, it has been granted, but when election day comes, we are short of staff and we don't have the time to let you go.
Okay.
The polls close, and then what happens is it's too late for that voter to fill out the go through the process of an excuse absentee ballot.
Right.
So that is a vote that has been not counted.
So the listening audience here on FM Talk 106.5 in the Mobile market, 93.1 in Montgomery market, and WVNN up in the Huntsville market have a tendency to be conservative, right? So that's the typical listening audience for this program. And I really love getting into this conversation because I think it gives us the opportunity to talk with a richness that you don't typically get when either you have the talking points coming out of the national or the sound bites that typically come out of the media. So just indulge me a little bit by just explaining a little bit more. So when you talk about early voting, are you talking about conducting that in person? Are you talking about doing that from a mail-in fashion or a Dropbox fashion? What exactly do you mean from your advocacy for early voting?
From my point of view, I would like to see Monday when you have it would actually be at your discretion between the Border Registrar's office, actually.
Okay.
And they would actually go in person and cast their vote.
Okay.
And it would be between the hours of operation.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then that office manager would have to coordinate as to who is actually going to be off one day within that week in order to cover that Saturday.
Sure.
And that's just office management. And that means that you would not have to spend overtime in order to cover that day on Saturday.
Okay.
Furthermore, the voter, when they cast their vote, it will be secure.
Oh, absolutely.
The question is, and the complaints that I have been hearing across the state while out canvassing and talking with the voters, is about election integrity,
mm-hmm.
about the integrity of the vote, if it's going to be cheating. I don't believe it would be any type of cheating at all.
Let me stop you just for a second, because I want to tie this one off before we get into that larger topic of voting integrity. So during the 2020 cycle, we had the opportunity under the Kennedy Strategic Communication brand to participate in the public service campaign under the leadership of our local probate judge, Don Davis, that was encouraging in-person absentee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand there's a subtle difference between in-person absentee and early voting, but essentially the execution's the same. So you were still showing up physically to a location that is monitored by somebody within the organization that typically monitors elections, right? It's just not a random person.
Yes.
And then you would just be able to cast your ballot on that Saturday, Sunday, Monday, in addition to what you're able to do on the typical election day. Is that correct? Is that fair, the way that I described that? Yeah, and I think that's really important, because even to a person, there was not much significant pushback on in-person absentee, although there was a little bit more paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
That was not one of the things that captured a lot of attention that a whole bunch of people were opposed to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to see that your advocacy is moving in that direction as well.
And can I add something to that?
Please.
With the excuse absentee ballot, I am willing to have it pushed for no excuse absentee ballot. The reason being is because in the previous election, it was discussed that if someone did not check one of those boxes as a reason, then that ballot was not counted.
Okay.
So I think it's very important that the voters know that if it is still excuse, check the box. But I'm pushing for no excuse absentee ballots.
Sure, sure. Well, thank you for clarifying that advocacy. Now for the big one. So one of the headlines that I referenced was there were a number of election deniers who were on the ballot on Tuesday night under the umbrella of what folks talked about as the big lie. So after you get away from the sensationalization and down to the core issue is election integrity. Mm-hmm. So how is it that you see the issue as it applies to the state of Alabama, and how would you address that if you were in the chair as our next Secretary of State?
Well, with election integrity, you just have to make sure that you look at what is in place now, how the operation is actually running at this particular time.
Okay.
You take actually what is there, you decipher what is going on that is going on the correct way by the rule of the law, and then what is not lining up with election integrity, then it needs to be corrected as soon as possible.
Sure.
To piggyback in another area, I want to see election audit. I believe that after each election, I believe that we should have an election audit.
Sure.
That would actually keep the integrity of the voters' vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that would bring a lot of transparency to the voters and across the nation, that with the audit that Alabama would have, that we make sure that our voters' vote is secure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's critical for everyone to actually maintain confidence in the system.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one of the things that came out after the 2020 election was, hey, there's an argument that says that there were changes made as a result primarily of COVID that may have left folks feeling uncomfortable about the speed or the differences that happen in such a short time frame. So there's a very legitimate argument that says periodically as you come to the end of an election, you should be able to look back, double and triple check just to make sure that everything was kosher, and that kind of allows you to continue to go forward. So there was one other thing that was kind of running around my mind that I wanted to get your comments on, just if you have a point of view. If not, we can just move on to the next topic. It was very interesting here in the state of Alabama when you look at what happened during the primary and runoff elections. On the Republican side, you had a few situations where there may have been some misalignment, where the redistricting information did not actually make itself all the way down to the ballot. So you had some individuals who were receiving ballots for districts that existed in the past, not necessarily the ones that exist now. And then in one specific situation, you had a race where it was literally one vote that separated the candidates, where some things were challenged. And then on the Democratic side, we had a situation where a family judge candidate in the Montgomery area actually won, and then some information was found subsequent to the win that ultimately caused the party to pull that nomination. So it's just kind of fascinating that all these various things were going on. Did you have any perspective or point of view or anything you'd like to share on any of the craziness that happened?
Well, with the judge in Montgomery County, information came forth about past history.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And that is an issue that we will take up in Birmingham on the 13th.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it will be where the ones who want to be considered for that said seat can be present on the 13th.
Okay.
So that they will be considered to be voted for by the voters.
Okay.
And I do encourage those individuals who are in that area and district to please come out. But it is when there are complaints brought about a candidate, then it's going to be investigated and handled accordingly.
Sure.
So the Alabama Democratic Party and all parties involved in making and ruling the decision that was made to remove her from as candidate status, they followed what is in place as the rule of law.
Sure.
And
sure.
So she will have an opportunity to address the SDEC in Birmingham, but it will still be the body's ruling as to who will be that candidate for that seat.
Gotcha. Well, thank you.
When it comes to the elections that actually happen with the, pretty much you have gerrymandering, you know, how the lines are drawn. And every so often, or so many years, the lines are redrawn to pretty much satisfy that candidate who is in that seat.
Gotcha.
And we're seeing it more favorably in the Republican Party. Now, after what happened in northern part of Alabama, it was complaints that maybe Democrats came in and voted as a Republican. So now we're facing and hearing open and close primaries where now there is a Republican legislator who has already drafted a bill and the ink has dried and he's just waiting on this election. So hopefully he can get it passed. That's what he's feeling in the Republican Party. They want to try to get that bill passed.
Okay. So let me just give a little context for the listening audience. So one of the theories of the Republican nominee for U.S. Senate, Katie Britt, her win, part of the theory was that there were Democratic voters who crossed party lines and ended up voting for Katie Britt. And because of that, this conversation has started primarily within Republican circles that there should perhaps be closed primaries where folks have to declare their political party. Right now, the state of Alabama has open primaries. Now, once you've cast your vote in the primary, you have to cast your vote for the same party in the runoff. But right now, there's some advocacy that would somehow make you do that before the election day, and that's literally what it was you were just talking about.
Yes, right? So they're asking for you to register with one of the political parties, and then once you are registered with that political party, that is how you are actually have to vote in the primaries, and there's no changes. And we don't need that because that's another form of election subversion or voter suppression. Because right now Alabama is at its lowest number percentage in getting people out to the polls to vote. And if that is passed, that is going to decrease our numbers even lower. Because right now we're within 10 states as the lowest states of 10 in a nation, which is like 42%.
Right. And you know, because my question is, so suppose more than one race, you know, is the case. And I may be interested in one person in one party and another in another party because I am not a straight ticket voter. I want to vote based on the person and what they are bringing to the table, and it doesn't necessarily align with party. How would, do you see any way that that, what they're trying to propose now, would work for something in this scenario?
I feel that it is your right to cast your vote how you see to cast your vote. I don't think you should be pressured into allowing someone publicly to know exactly how you're actually casting your vote. Because right now, when you're going for, I'll just tie this in quickly, when you're going on a job interview, they're looking at now not just your bio, but they look at your social media.
Right.
And that is something else they will consider. And if this is a Republican CEO and you are a Democrat registered, then they may not hire you, and that's a form of discrimination.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I believe that that voter should have his or her own discretion as to how he or she should vote.
Thank you.
All right. Well, hey, if folks want to get in contact with you or learn more about your campaign or make a contribution to your campaign, how can they go about doing that?
My campaign website is www.PamelaJLaffitte, and that's LAFFITTE.com.
All right. Well, we know that campaigns cost money. particularly when you're running all around the state. So we have probably about a minute here before we go to break, a little less than that. Can you just tell us the best thing you've enjoyed about campaigning?
Meeting the voters and the great spirit that they have, and it's a lot of energy out there where they're excited that I have taken my time to actually run. To be a voice for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Her energy is just infectious.
Yes,
and,
we're really
excited about that.
Thank you so much.
Have you managed to get into all the various nooks and crannies in the state?
Not everything, but okay. I'm attempting.
Well, we know that it takes a lot of time and effort and energy to run for political office, particularly if you're running for office statewide.
Yes.
And we definitely appreciate you for doing that. So thank you so much for coming to spend a little time with us. Right? And we will definitely look forward to having you back soon.
Thank you so much. I look forward to it.
All right. So for those of you who may be just now joining the program, we have been talking to Ms. Pamela Lafitte, who is the Democratic Party nominee for Secretary of State. And she has taken a few minutes to give us her perspective on all of her priorities if she's fortunate and blessed enough to be elected. So with that, we are going to go to our bottom half of the hour break, and we will see you on the other side. You're listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, Success.com.
Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market. Specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications, Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.
What do business, municipality, government, and nonprofit leaders have in common? The desire to win, to fulfill the mission for the benefit of their customers and constituents. That's why they call us at Kennedy Strategic Communication. At KSC, we help our clients develop strategies for targeting and converting their target markets. We provide branding, public relations, marketing, advertising, executive coaching, campaign and political support, and other business services. With over 25 years of experience in corporate, nonprofit, startup, and political settings from coast to coast, Kennedy Strategic Communication is here to help you capture your best customers. Learn more at KennedyStrategicCommunication.com or call us at 334-544-0510. That's 334-544-0510.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. For those of you who are just now joining us, during the first half hour, we had a very informative conversation with Ms. Pamela Lafitte, who is the Democratic Party nominee for Secretary of State. We talked a little bit about her priorities if she was elected and touched a little bit on early voting as well as the restoration of voting rights. So with that, we are actually going to go to the phone lines and see if we have our second guest of the evening. Ms. Flowers, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
So it is so good to hear your voice. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful.
That is absolutely great. So the last time that you were on Kennedy for Alabama, it was actually the evening that we did the debate with Senator Flowers. So since that time, you have won the nomination and have continued the campaign process. So how is it going so far?
We still have our nose to the grind. We're still pushing on and singing as we go.
All right. Well, hey, I know we're going to get into a number of specific questions here in a few minutes, but for folks who may be hearing you for the very first time, particularly given the fact that our primary listening audience has a tendency to be conservative on the radio stations that play Kennedy for Alabama, just take a minute or two to tell folks a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am from Birmingham, of course, and I am the Democratic nominee for governor. Born and raised here in Birmingham, I am a mom, a grandmom, and a great-grandmother, five. I studied and obtained my bachelor's in audiology and my master's in rehabilitation counseling, or should I say, rehabilitation counseling from the University of Tennessee at Knoxville. And I'm an educator. I've been educating for over 20 years until my husband's health failed. And thus, this is where I am now to, seek change for our state.
All right. Well, thank you for giving us that little bit of information about your background. So I know that there are several areas in which you have specific views and intents and priorities for the state. Could you just take a moment and share what your priorities are and what you would be focused on if you're fortunate and blessed enough to be elected as our next governor?
There's so many issues that Alabama is faced with and has been wrestling with for a long time. But just to narrow things in a little bit, we know, of course, everyone does, that how Alabama is low on the totem pole of just about in every area there is, of education, health care, the criminal justice system, of course, and our economy. And so those are the four issues that I've been addressing throughout my campaign. So I want to start with the education, being an educator. And the current concern that I've seen and I've experienced being educated here in the system, it has caused a lot of hardship. I guess not hard, but heart. Should I say disheartening?
Okay.
For me, to where I'm, it caused me to just wonder why all. Why things are the way they are for our children and the education system. And it seems like our legislatures have not put much thought or much of anything, money or whatever, into ensuring that our children, all of our children, are accessible to good education.
Okay.
And ensuring that they are brought up to where they can be successful. So that's I've been pushing for that, and to help assist with that. I'm have to tag this along with it, the lottery. That will help as a proponent, an engine to help us get funding to better educate our children and to pay our teachers and give our teachers what they need.
Let me ask you this question. And this is a momentary aside, it's slightly tongue-in-cheek. So there was recently a $1 billion lottery jackpot that was sponsored by Mega Millions. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that from last week?
Mm-hmm. It was, you know what, it was a whole line of Alabamians.
Yes.
On TV, I was like, oh, Lord, all that money could have been brought here in our state, but go ahead, I'm sorry.
Exactly. And so what I wanted to ask you was, I understand you were having a conversation on education, but since you mentioned lottery, I just wanted to get your point of view on allowing the voters of Alabama to vote on that particular issue. Where do you stand on that?
Well, you know, I spent most of my adult life in Tennessee.
Okay.
When I left here in 78 after graduation, a few months later, I went on to Tennessee, Marble College, dropped out and, of course, married my husband, and I lived there. Mm-hmm. And then I went back to school. But that allowed me to be a beneficiary of the lottery of Tennessee. I was able to pay part of my education, not all, but part of my education through the lottery, the Hope Scholarship. And being a recipient of that, that helped us. Helped my husband. You know, we still had children in school and had two grandchildren coming up, you know, that we were, you know, because our daughter was a teenage mom.
Okay.
So we had a house full of children. And so wanting and desiring to go back to school, that Hope Scholarship helped tremendously for me.
Gotcha.
And not only that, the lottery also, it helps with the infrastructure. Tennessee is, we know it's a beautiful state. We know that. The area that I lived in, the lottery money is continued. They are continuously using that to build the infrastructure. They are consistently working on the construction of the highways. And just the roads, the byways and all. So they don't suffer with a lot of what we are going through with sewage fields, with dilapidated bridges and holes and manholes in the roads.
Indeed.
It doesn't matter. Now,
indeed.
That's one thing I said about Alabama. Out of all that Alabama's gone through and has done, in terms of discrimination, the poor infrastructure, you know, is across the board. So we can't say Alabama discriminates with that, you know. So I've seen it in the best neighborhoods and in the worst of neighborhoods that is still just terrible.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Just,
that's
what I see a lot. You know, that the lottery can do. It can, you know, really enhance our state.
Okay. So we managed to get two things on that one. We got a little bit in terms of education. We got a little bit in terms of the lottery and some of the revenue from lottery, obviously going into things like college scholarships and also things like infrastructure. I actually want to tee up one of the more controversial topics because I know it's something that folks are particularly passionate about, regardless of which side of the proverbial issue that they are on. So here on Tuesday night, the voters in the state of Kansas actually ended up voting in favor of protecting a woman's right to choose. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to get a clear understanding from you, being able to talk to the listening audience about where you stand on that particular issue. And you can do that personally. You can do that from a perspective of public policy, however it is that you want to address it. And then I'll have some follow-on questions for you.
a woman's rights. You know, I just think about our history, you know, how we dated way back, you know, first mm-hmm. we were considered as not, I guess you can say, a citizen. We didn't have voting rights, you know, white or black.
Right.
But then, you know, the black woman was the last to obtain her rights to vote. I see a lot of the struggle that we as a gender has had to go through. But in terms of our rights, our rights are our body. You know what? The rights are our body. We have that right, you know. Mm-hmm. And no one, no man, you know, no woman, no one should be able to use up authority on what we do to our bodies, you know. And if you're going to go that far, you might as well ban drinking for everybody, smoking, tattooing, overeating. I mean, so let's just be real. And I mean, for the body.
Right.
So the woman's body, and it's not fair for our legislatures to put that burden, to put that call on us when God has made us all free and moral agents. Even he doesn't do that. He just put the standards. You know, he gets life and death, and he tells us to choose life, but does he go and just beat it over our heads and say, well, you're going to go to prison, or are you going to be, you know, stand before the firing squad if you, you know, if you have an abortion or do anything? God does not do that. And I mm-hmm. think he being the supreme ruler, the authority, man has no right to do that. So that's my opinion on it, that no one has the right to tell me what to do to me.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because when we're having the conversation, you know, if we were sitting on the porch having a couple of glasses of lemonade, we would have a tendency to talk about it in much the same way that you just did. I think the reason why it's important to have it in the context of an interview like we're doing right now is that we have to make it really clear, because that's what allows a person to understand where ultimately a candidate stands. So what I'm hearing is it sounds like you're making a distinction between how you feel personally, kind of leaning more towards a pro-life space, and how you feel from an instrument of public policy, which sounds like it might be more in line of a person's right to choose. And I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but is that kind of capturing what it is you're communicating?
Right. It definitely is. And I think, you know, that our government has overstepped its bounds, you know, in that regard.
Okay.
I mean, and here we are a democracy. And, you know, you think about our founding fathers when they wrote it. Yes, they had slaves. They did. And, you know, we can't condone that. But what was in the past is in the past. But they were men who still had morals, and they believe that every man was created equal.
Hey, let me pause you just for a second, Ms. Flowers. I'm going to need to go to my last commercial break, and then we will bring you back on the other side. So for all of you in the listening audience, we're going to take just a couple of minutes, and we will be back. You're listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop up with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, Success.com.
Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market, specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications. Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. For those of you who are just joining us, we are having a very informative conversation with Miss Yolanda Flowers, who's the Democratic Party nominee for governor of the state of Alabama. Miss Flowers, you still there? Miss Flowers, are you still there?
I am.
All right. Wonderful. So we're just going through the topics on your priority list. So thank you for giving us your views there on the last topic. So let's go to the topic of health care. So what are your priorities and plans with regards to health care in the state of Alabama?
Well, my priority, my plan is this, is to make sure that every citizen, not just our elite, but every citizen be able to afford health care.
Okay.
So my desire is to expand Medicare or the Medicaid. You know, to not just to supplement or help our seniors, but to those who are working and yet can't afford health care. You know, they have their children, they need dental, they need eye care, and, you know, help take care of those underlying conditions, or just have a good checkup. You know, we just need to make it affordable. I think about, it was probably about 30 years ago, when I lived in Tennessee, one of our friends, my husband and I friends, he moved to Canada.
Okay.
Came home to visit, and he talked about, oh, you know, how the country takes care of the citizens, okay? They have free health care. And I was like, what? And, of course, talked about how much their minimum wage, how high it was. And that was 30 years ago. We thought $10 an hour. So we just think about if Canada can do it, certainly we can do it. Just making health care benefits available and affordable. Look at no premium, you know, low premium or no copay. Something that will help our citizens, the poor, not just the rich, the poor, the middle class, to be able to afford to take care of their families, to take care of themselves. So what I learned is if you're sick, you can't work. And if you can't work, you're not going to be able to eat, okay? And if you can't eat, you will eventually die. So that's how it will go. So we want to ensure that all Alabamians have good health care and that it is equitable for everybody. They will get the good health care, okay. We'll be able to afford to pay our doctors, and that these insurance companies, that they will not discriminate against women, okay, and against people of color or young men of color from 18 to 35. We just want to make sure, and our senior citizens, they shouldn't have to pay $468 a month on a premium. So we want things fair. Them,
yeah. So yes, you absolutely hit on something there when you started talking about premiums, deductibles, co-pays, and using the tools and leverage of government when it's appropriate to try to make those a little bit more affordable. So with that, let's segue and talk a little bit about the economy. So the environment that we're in right now, we've been seeing the impacts of inflation. We've seen the price of commodities increase. The price of gas has started to go down a little bit, but it's still fairly significant compared to how it was before. What are your thoughts and intentions with regards to improving the economy? And just know we just have a couple of minutes left, so try to keep your answers short if you can.
Okay. I will try very hard. Well, my thing is, one, we want to be able to ensure that people are working, okay? But the incentive is this, is to give them a good living wage, you know, $15 an hour. This is something that President Biden has been pushing since the time that he was installed.
Okay.
That all across the nation, that will be, you know, the base, $15
sure.
an hour. Bringing in solar farms for our rural counties so that they, and working with the farmers and to help cut back and use the natural lighting and for electricity and for our hospitals and our schools, for all across our homes, and in installing solar panels in our homes. So there's a way to do these things. Create a plan for our citizens to where they can cut back, have them to qualify for having solar panels put in their home for heating. So there's a way. And, of course, the lottery. The lottery will help bring in more jobs.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely will help bring in more jobs.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. We were able to get into a few topics. Of course, we can never get as deep as we want to in the limited time we have available. But do this for me. Let the listening audience know how they can contact you, get in contact with your campaign. If they want to make a political donation, what's the best way to contact you?
The best way is to visit my website at yolandaforgovernor.org. That is the word, F-O-R. And on that website, it will lead you to the donation button. You can click on there for whatever amount you desire that you want to give. We also have another button for volunteers. We need volunteers. That website will also lead you to my email address at yolandaforgovernor@gmail.com and also social medias. The phone number is 205-563-0382. We will be adding more numbers. And my address is, we have two, Post Office Box 320-583, Birmingham, Alabama, 3532.
I was going to say, I'm sure they'll be able to figure that out once they get the Birmingham in there. Well, hey, listen, we have actually come to the end of the show. Thank you so much for spending some time with us, and you be really careful on the campaign trail. So for the listening audience, thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode of Kennedy for Alabama. We will continue to interview candidates and allow them to bring their views to you directly. Until then, my name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama.